So last summer, Ainsley and I celebrated a significant milestone in our birthdays. We both turned 50 last year, and birthdays are normally big deals in our family, and this really stems from the way Ainsley was raised more than the way I was raised. They always celebrate the person in a significant way. For me, it was just about getting in our house, we just got the gift that we wanted. But with Ainsley's family, it was always about celebrating the person. So birthdays are big in our place, and you know that if one of the people in our house, it's their birthday, they're going to wake up in the morning with balloons and streamers all over the house just to celebrate them right away, and we try to make the best of the day and do a few real special things. One of the things that we do is we try to pick a meal that the person whose birthday it is absolutely loves. And so our family loves Thai food. And I thought, man, it's Ainsley's 50th. It's not going to be the most fantastic event day because we were looking after Cedar last year, which is amazing. Ainsley loved that. Was so excited to be able to do that. But we weren't going to be able to do anything really extra for an event. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to pick a Thai restaurant. I'm going to see if there's a place that we haven't been to before, and just surprise her with a really nice Thai restaurant. So I started to do a little bit of research, and I found this Thai restaurant that had incredible ratings. And I had never been there before, and it said, look, there's limited seating, so you may want to book ahead and ensure that your spot is reserved. And so I thought, okay, it's a Thursday night, everything's fine, I don't think we need to do that. And that's not the problem of the story, okay? So we have our day, and we drop Cedar off for Bailey and Katrina, and there was a bunch of traffic and construction, and so it took us a longer period of time to get to the place where we were having this Thai meal. We were continuously traveling and having stop and go traffic, and all of us are complaining in the car about how hungry we are. And Ainsley's like, man, I am so starving. I can't wait to get to this place. And it's like, well, you're going to love it. It's like the highest rated place. It's brand new. I'm so excited to take you there. We arrive at the location, and there was limited seating. The limited seating was outside on picnic tables. Now, you got to remember, this is her 50th birthday. And I walked into this store, realized there was no in-restaurant type of seating, that this was a takeout place. And yeah, you're feeling it now, right? And we are going to be sitting for her 50th birthday on a picnic table. To make matters worse, here we were sitting on the picnic table eating Thai food on styrofoam plates and plastic forks, plastic knives. And so I'm sitting out there, and I, before we actually ordered, I said, look, we can go somewhere else. This is not what I thought. There was no indication that this was going to be what we had. We can go to our favorite Thai restaurant. She's like, I am starving. Let's just eat here. And so we sat there in that picnic table in an industrial area, eating Thai food on styrofoam plates using plastic forks and knives. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I made a really bad decision. I made a really bad decision. She was good about it, but I kept thinking to myself, I wish I had made a better decision. I wish that I had done a little bit more research. I wish I had made a much better decision. And each of us in our lives, we have moments that we can think of where we made a decision, we made a choice, where we thought we were doing something with the best intent. And then when we got there, to that point of choice, we realized that the decision we made was a poor choice, and we all can easily step back to what I experienced that July 7th day, and we look at that moment in our own personal lives and go, man, I wish I made a better decision. This is exactly what the main character in the story we're going to look at today felt. And I want you to turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42, or you could read on the screen. For those of you who are watching us online, we encourage you just to follow along with what you see on your television screen or device. Luke chapter 10, verse 38 to 42 says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, Don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Jesus is passing through Bethany, and he decides he's going to stop at the home of Martha, who is the sister of Mary and the sister to Lazarus. He has some kind of connection to this family. They are a dear family to him, and Martha has this house. Most likely it's her own house, and she is the master of this house and wants to invite him to be her guest. In those times, in Bible times, hospitality was a high value. I don't know about you, but I find that much of our North American lifestyle, we have hospitality to individuals that maybe we are really close to, but we don't focus on hospitality as a big value in our society. But in those days, hospitality was a high value, and your reputation was actually determined based upon how well you hosted somebody. And so Martha wants to ensure that her reputation continues to be high, that she continues to be known as an individual who's incredibly hospitable, and she wants to serve Jesus in this hospitable way and make sure that everything is good. She invites Jesus into her home, and we immediately get to the story, and we realize that there are two sisters. One is Mary, who seems to sit at this might be sore for me because of yesterday, but seems to sit at the feet of Jesus as he's teaching. And while there's a bunch of busyness going on in the story, Mary's sitting at the feet of Jesus as he talks. But there's another sister who finds herself looking after the needs of the house, and she's cooking and she's baking and she's telling people where they're supposed to go. She's trying to keep everything in order so that Jesus and his disciples are well hosted. And what we see in this story is really two individuals who have a choice of how they're going to spend their time, and one makes the better choice. This isn't just about what you do with your time in your house. This really is a story about discipleship. It's about making the right choices in key areas of our life when it comes to our discipleship. And so I want to examine some of these elements from the story this morning. The first thing that we notice in the story is this idea of the choice to focus. It says, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Verse 40. Martha's not merely preparing a meal. She is distracted by a lot. She's distracted by the hosting responsibilities. In fact, in verse 41, it says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. This isn't just about the meal. This isn't just about the food. It's about many things. She's upset that she's doing all the work. She may be upset that Mary has acted inappropriately, because in Bible times, the only individuals who would ever sit at someone's feet would ever stay in the part of the house where the men were either a prostitute or an elderly woman. And so Mary's not old. She is acting inappropriately, according to Martha. That may be what's going through her mind. And maybe she's upset about something that we don't even understand in the story. But Martha's mind is bouncing back and forth from this issue to this issue to this issue, and she is having a hard time focusing. In fact, the Bible tells us that she's distracted. And this idea of distracted means that she's pulled away from that which should be her focus. She's constantly pulled in one direction. She wants to go in this direction, but she's pulled over here by food. She's pulled over here about the servants and what they're supposed to do for Jesus. She's pulled over here by the cleanliness. She's pulled over here by her own expectations of her sister. She's pulled in every direction. A better discipleship choice is for us to regularly focus on what Jesus is saying. You see, here's Martha, and she's over here, and she's doing all the preparations. She's focused on everything, and she's in the other room. She's cooking and she's preparing, And Jesus is nearby, he's over here, but it's hard to hear what Jesus is saying when he's not your focus. She's looking at the recipe cards. She's looking at the bakers. She's looking at the people preparing the meals. Maybe she's looking at the people who are hosting Jesus. She's in the same space as Jesus. She's just not focused on what he's saying. But Mary's sitting here, and she's listening to his every word. She's listening to everything he says. She is so focused on Jesus. Discipleship is about focusing our attention on Jesus, not simply having him in the same room, not simply having him nearby. It's about being so focused on him that we're able to understand what he's saying. Back in April when I was flying to Bangladesh, I had a stopover in Toronto for a few hours, which provided me the opportunity to be on a Zoom call with national office. I'm on something called the Strategic Vision Committee for our national office, and I was going to be able to tune in for the couple hours while I was there at Pearson International. And so I found a spot in my terminal, pulled up my laptop, and connected into Pearson's Wi-Fi. And if anybody's ever flown before, you know that it all depending on what airport you are in, you may have good Wi-Fi, you may have bad Wi-Fi. And so I found that Pearson was pretty spotty. And so I'm on this Zoom call, and we're talking about some of the strategic vision stuff that we're working on as a group, and we're trying to engage in things, but my Wi-Fi just keeps dropping, and so I'm missing some things that people are saying. My buddy Jim Malloy, who's in the Maritimes, he texts me and he's like, "Hey, Hillier, why don't you just use my Air Canada pass?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, I can give you the number, and all you got to do is go in there and just give them the number and you'll be allowed to use it. The Wi-Fi there is incredible." And I said, okay, but I'm flying internationally. He's like, "It shouldn't be a problem." So I pick up my laptop, And I'm on the Zoom call, and I start to walk over to Air Canada, which maybe like 100 feet away. Walk over to Air Canada, and then I turn the camera off, turn my microphone off, and I start to talk to the individual, and he's like, no, you can't, you're flying international. I said, but I was told that this would allow me to come in here. Nope, this is only for Canada. So we have a little bit of a discussion, and he wins. And so I go back to my spot, and reopen my camera, I keep my microphone off, and now I'm trying to pay attention, but I'm distracted by the fact that the Wi-Fi is bad, and now I'm having a conversation while the chair of this committee is speaking, and I start to text Jim. I'm like, "Hey, like, great idea, I just got rejected." And we're back and forth, and we're texting one another, and I'm listening partially to the conversation, partially to Jim, partially thinking about how bad my Wi-Fi is, partially thinking about everybody around me who's listening to me. And all of a sudden, the chair of this committee, Andy, he says, "And Jeff, which committee are you going to be on?" And I it's in and out, and I'm like, "Well, whatever, Andy." Yeah. And he's like, "Are you good with that?" And I said, "Yeah, whatever, wherever you want to use me, because I haven't really been paying attention." The next thing I find out is that I'm on two committees. Somewhere in the middle of all my distractions, I was asked whether or not I would serve on two committees. The only person on this strategic vision committee, I'm asked to sit on two subcommittees, and I say yes, which I wasn't happy about, because it means more time. And as I'm doing this, I realize that my distractions are preventing me from hearing important information that is a detriment to my life. You see, our distractions in life, friends, that cause us to be pulled away from what Jesus is trying to say to us, will cause us to make decisions that will be detrimental to our lives. Every day, Jesus wants to speak something to you. Every day, Jesus wants to communicate to you. You see, being a Christian isn't just about praying to God. It's a two-way conversation where we speak to him and he speaks to us. But some of us get so distracted, and friends, I'm not pointing fingers, because this is me. I'm task-oriented. I love being with people, but I have a list that I want to get through, and it's easy for me to be picking up things and going, "Okay, we'll do this, and get so distracted by things that I fail to actually focus on what Jesus is saying. When we want to communicate to somebody something really important, we'll say something to them like, Hey, I want you to sit down. I have something important for you to hear. And what we're saying to them is, hey, I need you to stop being distracted. I need you to get focused. I need you to hear not just words, but the content of the words that I'm speaking. I need you to sit down and listen. Or we might say, hey, you've got a lot on your mind right now. There's a lot of distractions. Let's talk tonight so that I can share something really important with you. We don't want to pass on important information if an individual is distracted. And we've all been with people that you're trying to share something from your heart, something that's important to you, some vital piece of information, and the person we're talking to, it's like they're not even listening because they have so many other distractions. I could be with somebody and start talking and start to realize that they're focused on everything else, and I just say, yeah, I just need you to pray for me because I'm pregnant. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, that's great. They're not listening. Truth is that God very rarely comes up to us and says, I need you to pay attention. I need you to sit down so I can communicate with you. I need you to get through your stuff, and tonight we need to have some time together because I want to say something. God rarely ever grabs hold of you and forces you to focus and listen to what he has to say. But God wants you to make a choice that focus will become your priority, that you will make the choice to focus on his words, not just being a person who prays, not just being somebody who reads the Bible, not just being somebody who does stuff for Jesus, but somebody like Mary who's sitting and captivated by whatever Jesus wants to say, allowing us to hear what he's saying for the now moments of our life. Mark Buchanan says, silence is the room where we create for the searching of God, where we hear his voice and we follow. And sometimes we need to sit and simply be quiet and not even pray, not do another thing for Jesus, not do another thing for our own plans, but simply sit like Mary did. Say, just talk to me so that I know what I'm supposed to do and I can follow you. Revelations chapter 2 and chapter 3, there are seven times where the Spirit of God speaks and says, Jesus speaks and he says, whoever has an ear, let them hear what the Spirit is saying. Jesus isn't saying, okay, for only those people who have ears, the rest of you who have no ears, everything's fine. We know that that's a foolish way to look at it. What he's saying is you all have ears, and since you have ears, you are going to need to focus and hear what the Spirit is saying. Not just the words, but the content of his words. You've got to make the choice to focus. Secondly, the choice to be shaped. Verse 39 says she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he said. I don't know how you've read this story in the past, but I sometimes picture like a Little House on the Prairie moment where Mary's just sitting there at Pa's feet and she's sitting there and she's just like smiling, listening to every story, just captivated by everything that Jesus is saying. That this is what the Bible's saying when it says that she's sitting at his feet. But there's something much more significant that's going on in the story. You see, in Bible times, when an individual sat at a rabbi's feet, it was a declaration that they were a disciple of that rabbi. And so Mary is more than just sitting there listening to stories. She's taking a position of humility as she's lower than Jesus, and she's looking up, giving him the honor. And as she sits there in what is reserved posture for a disciple, she, with her body language, is saying, shape me, Rabbi. I want to become like you. We can't miss this. This isn't just her listening to Jesus. She's sitting there as a disciple saying, shape me, Jesus. I want to become like you. Mary was not choosing inappropriate behavior, acting like a prostitute or pretending to be someone older who would be allowed to be there. Mary wasn't choosing to ignore her responsibilities. Mary was choosing to be shaped by the great rabbi. But then there's Martha. And the Bible tells us that Martha is just so busy. She's busy preparing. And you've got to think about this. As Mary's over there being shaped by Jesus, Martha's shaping. She's taking all her time to go, oh, okay, I got to follow this recipe. I got to put a little bit of sugar in there. And maybe a little bit of, and this is going to be really unhappy with me using all her stuff. But anyways, a little bit of vanilla, and I'm going to put some salt in there because that's really important, just a little bit of that. And she's working it. She just keeps working the food. She's working the people who are serving. She keeps trying to shape the environment. She wants this to be a great environment for Jesus. She just does everything to shape things around her instead of allowing the one that's before her to shape her. It's hard to do both at the same time. We sense a responsibility within our lives to shape things in our life. I mean, young adults, teenagers, when you get to that place where you graduate from university, college, and you take on a career, there is this big word that becomes glued to your life until the day you die. Responsibility. And we think about it every day. My kids don't have the responsibility of making the meals. My kids are little. They don't have the responsibility of paying the mortgage. They don't have the responsibility of getting an oil change. They don't have the responsibility of looking after precious cargo, namely kids. They don't have the responsibilities. And when we hit adult life, we feel this great sense of responsibility, and we move into Martha mode, where we feel that we've got to shape our homes, we've got to shape our careers, we've got to shape our finances, and we've got to shape our relationships. We do so much shaping, but true discipleship recognizes that we won't be able to shape the things properly in our lives or for the kingdom unless Jesus shapes us. You can't properly shape your kids without Jesus shaping you. You can't properly shape your marriage without Jesus shaping you. You can't properly shape in the workplace without Jesus shaping you. You can't properly shape for the kingdom of God without Jesus shaping you. Friends, please listen to me. If you are like me and you are a driven individual, it is easy to get over into this place and just say, I will do for Jesus. I will shape for Jesus and think that you will have success because you'll find out that your success will be very limited because what you do here cannot properly be effective until you've been here being shaped by the rabbi. By the rabbi. Every year, there is this part of my property that goes crazy. It's called my garage. I don't know if you have garage issues, but I do. My garage was designed for my car to go in it. I don't think my car has ever entered into that garage. Like they didn't build garages as a storage place. They built a garage. It's supposed to be the place you store your car. And every year, Ainsley tells me that she would like to park her car there during the winter. But from fall to the next fall, things happen. I've got some adult kids, and my son Bailey and Katrina, they live out in Wakefield, and I still have some of their stuff in my garage. They've got a full garage, a basement, and a train car on their property, and they still have stuff at my house, in my garage. My son Brock, he's a warranty officer for Mattamy, and so he's got his tools in there. He's got drywall from some of the projects he's done in there. He's got, I mean, everything, a garbage bag, he's got everything. I got tires that I don't know who they belong to. Like stacks of tires. These things don't, like, it's not just like it's empty, and then all of a sudden one day you walk in and go, oh, what happened to the emptiness? It doesn't happen overnight. You understand, anybody who has a garage, you understand it. Day by day, our kids act in satanic ways. And they come into our garage and they just, oh, let's put this here because there's space. And there are times I walk into my garage, I'm expecting to meet a family or somebody who's living in there because it's just so much stuff. And so every fall, we get through summer, but it's chaotic, and every fall there's this moment as we put our patio furniture away where it's time to shape the garage for its original purpose. And what we have to do is we have to devote some time and focus on it. And we have to step into the garage, and we have to start to pull some things out. We have to start to reorganize some things. And every now and then we need to buy some element that will help us with the spacing and the organization of it, and we need to put it in to get it back to a place where it's not chaotic. Every fall, we have to shape that garage. And friends, over time, our lives become like my garage. Over time, things get put in there. We just go, okay, I'll just leave that there for now. I'll dress at some point. Every now and then, little things get in, and some of those things are not very harmful, but they're just cluttering us. Some of those things are actually damaging to our spiritual life, but things each day get into our lives, and they clutter our soul. And we get to a place where the people that we're supposed to be, we're not, because we've been going and going and going. And we fail to sit at the rabbi's feet and say, Rabbi, just shape us to be like you. Rabbi, just shape us to be like you. We need you to do something to our soul. We need you to speak something in our life. We sit at your feet like Mary did, and we want to just tell you that we need you to shape us. We want to hear your words. We want you to speak to things in our heart. We want you to do whatever you need to do to make us become more like you. We need Jesus to shape us. William Booth, who was the founder of the Salvation Army, was going through a very difficult time in his life. He was busy. He was in Martha mode, just doing lots of stuff. And he was incredibly discouraged, and he was feeling ineffective. The story goes is that he was at this place where he wanted to quit, and so he wrote his wife a letter. I don't know why him and his wife were communicating back and forth with letters. I mean, maybe it's like texting now, but he wrote her a letter. And then he expressed how discouraged he was. He was going full tilt for Jesus. He expressed how ineffective he felt at what he was doing. And he told her that he felt like quitting. When she read the letter, she wrote him back, and this is what she said. I know how possible it is to preach and pray and sing and even shout while the heart is not right with God. I know how popularity and prosperity have the tendency to elate and exalt self. If the heart is not humble before God, I know how Satan takes advantage of these things to work our destruction, if possible, of one whom the Lord uses to pull down strongholds of his kingdom. And all these considerations make me tremble and weep and pray for you, my dearest love, that you may be able to overcome all his devices, and having done all to stand, not in your own strength, but in humble dependence on him who worketh all in all. What was she saying? She's saying that we can be doing everything for Jesus. We can be super busy, have the apron on, making the food. We can be serving in areas of church. We can be busy trying to make our workplace a better place. We can be looking after our families, trying to give our best. We can be giving it all. But if we haven't found time where Jesus can work his all in our lives, we'll find ourselves discouraged and wanting to quit. You see, part of our discipleship is getting alone with Jesus and allowing him to shape us. Mary wanted to focus on getting things done, but Mary wanted to focus on Jesus getting things done within her. If we're going to allow Jesus to shape us, friends, we need to stop, focus, and say, Jesus, I need you. I need you to pull some things out of my life. I need you to pull some stuff that just keeps showing up in my spiritual garage. I need you to reorganize some things in my life, because there's times it's very chaotic. And Jesus, I need you to plant some things inside of me so that I can become more like you, so that I can be shaped to look and act more like you. I always pray for our staff every June as we go off in the summer, because we take about 6 weeks where we don't have a staff meeting, and I always pray that the summertime would be a season of refreshing where God can do something in our lives because we've been going so full tilt. I pray that's happened in your life this summer, but maybe not, because I know what it's like to have busy summers. But friends, if we keep going and keep going and keep going, our garage will be so full, we will never fulfill the purposes that we were made for. We need to sit at the feet of Jesus and allow Him to shape us. The choice to be shaped. And lastly, the choice to prioritize. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or even indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. There's a few things I want to highlight in this little passage. Martha, Martha. He doesn't just say Martha, but he says it twice. And when you see something written in scriptures twice, it's like God's taking this giant highlighter and saying, pay attention. This is important. And as he's communicating to Martha and he calls her name twice, he's like, Martha, Martha, you need to listen to me. What I'm about to say to you is so vitally important, you don't want to miss it. And then he says, few things, indeed one. And what he is referring to is that which is absolutely necessary. That which provides sustenance. And then Jesus goes on and he says that Mary has chosen what is better. And what it means is that she's chosen the choice option, the better option, that which is the best of the best. She's chosen the choice option. And so this is the paraphrase of what Jesus communicates to Martha. Martha, pay attention to the choice option before you. It's the thing that is absolutely necessary and the thing that will sustain your life. Jesus tells her that that choice option won't be taken away from her. Martha's choosing a good option. She's got her apron on or whatever it is that she's wearing to host Jesus. And she really wants to serve Him well. I mean, this is the custom of the day, hospitality. She wants to serve Jesus really well. And she's so focused on this. And she's trying to make Him some great muffins. And because she knows Jesus likes muffins. This is like extra biblical reading, by the way. And she finally gets it done, puts it in the oven, and then the muffin gets eaten. And I'm not going to do the whole thing, but it'll make my sermon longer. This one piece is going to make it longer. She spends all this time baking, and then it gets eaten. That which she had put all her time in, all her focus in, all her energies in, was good. She made some good muffins. But it only takes a matter of seconds where the food's gone. I hear this regularly in my house. Ainsley's like, I can't believe I spent hours. Like last night she made this amazing dish. She's like, I spent all this time making it, and it's gone. It's just gone. You see, that's what happens in so many things in our life. We spend all this energy going after things that don't last. I mean, friends, how many of you have spent extra hours trying to get that new car? And you love it when it pulls into the driveway, and then 5 years later, you're cursing it because it's falling apart, and you can't wait to get the next one. How many of you have spent countless hours trying to figure out which outfit you want to buy, and then a year later, it's out of fashion? For some of us, we don't care. Dom, there's so many things I could say, but I won't. We spend all this time going after things, making them priority. We go after jobs, we go after material goods, we go after experiences, and we spend so much money, and we spend so much time, we spend so much focus on these things, and like the muffin, after the time is done, if we fully receive it, then we go through it like that, and all the energy is lost. We spend so much time on things that we prioritize that just are taken away from us. It's not wrong to spend time on things. It's not. It's not wrong to focus on a career at times. It's not wrong to want your house to be nice or to have a car or to have clothes or great experiences. I'm like you. those are things that I appreciate in life, and I think those are blessings that Jesus has given me. But when those are my priorities, then I miss out on what really matters. And I sometimes know whether or not they're my priorities when they've captured my attention. You see, there's always something that's going to be capturing your attention. It can either be the things that matter to God or the things that matter to you. Martha spent her time prioritizing for the guest. All her time is for the guest. I got to do this for Jesus. I got to do this for Jesus. I got to do this for Jesus. Hey, get over here and clean the dust behind the rocking chair. Hey, you over here, make sure the table's set. She's doing all this work for the guest. But Mary, she's prioritizing being with the guest. Being with the guest. And I want to confess to you that in Christianity, in my life, and probably many of you, it's so easy to move into our Martha mode where we prioritize doing things for Jesus and make spending time with Jesus secondary. Where the priority is doing something for the guest but not being with the guest. Our time with God is something that cannot be taken from us. You've heard my story many times about the awakening that took place when I was 15 years old. I won't reiterate it, but 15 years of my life, I had been around the house where Jesus was hanging out. I grew up in a Christian home. And we went to church, and I was good and did all that. But something happened at the age of 15, this great awakening moment, and I found myself prioritizing my time with Jesus. In fact, I would come home from school, and before I did anything else, I would go downstairs and spend some time with Jesus. He was the person I most wanted to spend time with. And if I found myself in a day where it was crazy, crazy busy, before I went to bed, I had to make that a priority, that the day was not going to end unless I spent some time with Jesus. And all through my teenage years, from 15 right till I went to Bible college, I made my time with Jesus a priority. I got to tell you something, those years shaped who I am today. Those years of sitting at the feet of Jesus shaped who I am. They found out the importance of his presence, found out the importance of worship, listening to his voice. The things that Jesus did in those years where I made him my priority can never be taken away. I have clothes that I wore when I was 16 years old that I loved. Now, they're probably cool again today, but they got thrown out. There were experiences I had with friends that were really fun, but those things are gone. I can barely remember them. But my time with Jesus, it was a thing that can never be taken away. And friends, Jesus turns to Martha and says, look, you're worried about so many things. There's really just one thing you need. There's really just one thing that you need to make a priority, and that's your time with the guest. Your time with their guest. Our time with God is the most essential thing that we can choose in our life. There is nothing that will ever have more greater meaning than the time that you spend with God. I started off this message and I said that this story is a story of discipleship. And as followers of Jesus, we claim to be disciples of him. It's impossible to be a disciple if we don't spend time with Jesus. You can never be shaped like him. Friends, you can believe in him and you can love him for what he's done, but you can never truly call yourself a disciple. I'm not saying that in a mean way, but you can never really become a disciple unless you let him shape you, unless there's a priority for him. My last missions trip with this church, we had taken a team to Thailand, and we were in Thailand for less than 24 hours, and then we got on a flight and flew to Vietnam. There was about seven or eight of us, and we landed in Vietnam, and we were going to spend a number of days doing leadership development and some talks with many of the pastors in the northern part of Vietnam. We had been there for about two or three days, and when the conference was done, the pastor was very excited that he was going to have an opportunity to bless us after we had blessed this church. And so he said to us, he said, we're going to take you out to a really fancy restaurant. And we're super excited. We had been eating some bland noodles at time, and we were excited to go to this fancy restaurant. So we went to this restaurant, and it definitely was fancy. And we all sat down, And we're in Vietnam, and so we don't know what we should be ordering. Like, if it was like Pizza Hut, everything would be fine, but we didn't know what to order. And the pastor's like, don't worry, that my board member here, my chairman of my board, he's going to order for us. And so the chairman of the board pulls out the menu, and he's going, oh, we want one of these. And he's communicating to the waiter, we want one of these, we want one of these. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be so good. He is determined to bless us. Well, everything was full of anticipation until the frog legs arrived. And now the frog legs are there, these battered frog legs, and I'm like, oh my goodness. This is their special meal for us. It got better when the big giant snails came out. And I watched our team just kind of looking like they didn't know what to do with it. And we people were so gracious. They're you know, trying the snail, biting it very slowly and going, oh, is it good? I'm thinking, you liar. It's not good. Frog legs, not my choice. Went through this whole meal, and the truth is we got, they provided us some peanuts on the side as a little snack. We ate a lot of peanuts. The meal's done, and we said goodbye to the pastor and the board member, and my team looked at me and they said, we're starving. We need something to eat. And I was like, yeah, me too. And we went and found a Pizza Hut or something like that. But this board member is presenting us something that is meant to bless us without ever asking us what we like, what we want. How often in our lives do we do things for Jesus without ever stopping to say, Jesus, what is it that you want? Do you want me to be busy doing this, this, this? Or is this what you want right here? Friends, I want to tell you, you can do a lot of good things for Jesus and miss what he wants. You can do a lot of good things for Jesus and be only serving him frog legs. What Jesus wants most from your life is that you would sit at his feet, listen to his words, focus on what he's saying, allow him to shape your soul, pulling things out, organizing and putting things into you. What he wants most is that you would make your relationship with him a priority. That's what he wants most. And that needs to be our better choice. Today is not a sermon to wrap you on the knuckles saying, how dare you not spend time with Jesus? I understand the tension of living busy life. This is to encourage us to make a better choice like Mary did over Martha. Church, the rest of us, this is a week of making better choices. Too many picnic table moments in my spiritual life where I'm sitting at a picnic table on an important moment, eating from styrofoam plates, going, I wish I'd chosen better. And I can think of many spiritual moments in my life where I went, God, I chose the picnic table over something nice. I want you. I want to choose to focus. I want to choose to be shaped. I want to choose you to be my priority. And friends, I'm asking that this week you would take this message to figure out how to apply it to your life and ask Jesus what he most wants from you. I guarantee you it's not this. It's this. He wants to shape who you are. He wants to shape who you are. Let me pray for you as we conclude this service. Jesus, we thank you so much for your word, and I thank you for this great story of Mary and Martha. We want to be people who make the better choice, that have the choice option. And we don't want you to confront us like you had to confront Martha. But today, Jesus, help us to choose you, to prioritize you, to focus on your word, and allow you to shape us, not just come to you with our request, but allow you to shape us, pulling things out, organizing and putting things in so that we might become more like you. Jesus, today, let us choose what you want most. Let us choose our time with you every day as much as we possibly can. I pray that we would live this out this week. Would you be with each person as they engage with our world and try to live out their discipleship on a daily basis? God, help them this week. Give them the Spirit's power, I pray. And I pray your blessing on each one now, we ask. Be with each one in Jesus' name. Amen. Bless you, everyone. Have a great week.